Welcome, everyone. We'll call the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue to order today. We have on our schedule a public hearing for, and we will take these all at once, for Senate Bill 968, Senate Bill 754, and Senate Joint Resolution 26. Paul.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. You have in your packet several things. You've got a dash one amendment for each of the bills that are open for hearing. You have a summary page labeled stability package, and that stability package goes through the major elements of the three bills as amended. So this would incorporate the dash one amendments. SGR 26, the major change to that is it has changed from a revision to an amendment. And the reason for that is that it takes out some of the elements that it changed or amended other parts of the Constitution. It essentially puts the an emergency reserve fund, establishes it and puts it in the Constitution, and it allocates the 2% corporate kicker is calculated and allocated to the fund and 50% of the personal kicker. Senate Bill 968 establishes the mandatory savings program. It establishes a growth index that's equal to a projected revenue over appropriations in the prior biennium. A change from the earlier version, SGR 26, is that as a growth target, it uses personal income rather than population. And the other thing I have in your packet is a table with a whole bunch of numbers on it. And that's the one that shows you how the reserve fund would have been built up historically. And then on the other side of that, it shows the different factors we looked at as potential adjustments to the budget on an annual basis before the 3% went into reserves. And the three we looked at were population from the previous version, personal income in the current version, the dash one amendments, and then gross state product, which was another possibility we looked at. And you can see that the personal income historically on that chart grew by 11.9% per biennium. That growth rate has dropped, as you'd expect, and is actually down to 2.1% over the 08 to 10 period because of the depth of the recession. So that gives you a sense of the elements to it. The other major change is in Senate Bill 754. That bill takes the higher education reserve fund that was in the original SGR 26, puts it in statutorily and makes it a sub-account of the emergency reserve fund, which is created in SGR 26. So it would be subject to the same requirements and triggers to withdraw from, but it would be calculated separately as a statutory sub-account within the ERF. So the dollars in that would go to calculating the cap, for example, which is for the overall reserve fund, which is 14% of prior biennium revenue. So those are the three elements to it. I did make several charts for you to look at to illustrate the effects of the different components. The three things we put together, one was a historical look at 968 and how it would have allocated revenue among the three components if it would have been in effect historically. We then did some projections for 968 going forward based on the latest revenue forecast and the latest economic forecast. And then finally, we have a chart showing how SGR 26, along working with the subaccountants and Senate Bill 754, how that would have allocated surplus revenue that was went out as a kicker under law at the time, how it would have been allocated differently under SGR 26. So that's the information packet.
Okay, and it is my great honor and privilege to introduce our first two witnesses today, the Honorable Governor of Oregon, John Kitzhaber, and our Honorable Treasurer, Ted Wheeler, who had said they would like to testify together. Welcome, Governor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee. For the record, My name is John Kitzhaber, Governor of the State of Oregon. You might want to use this. I'm planning to have my testimony bring tears to your eyes. Attention here. I want to thank you very much for giving me the opportunity today to speak on Senate Joint Resolution 26, which would create an emergency reserve fund in the Oregon Constitution. I believe that to build a framework for a prosperous Oregon, we must have some fundamental changes in our tax structure. For a variety of reasons, as you know, we have unduly exposed ourselves to fluctuations in both the national and the global economy. In addition, a series of policies have put many cities and counties in compression, limiting their flexibility to raise revenue and increasing their reliance on state revenue to provide important services for their citizens and for their businesses. At the state level, we also rely far too heavily on both personal and corporate income taxes. Those sources provide approximately 90% of the state general fund, making our revenue stream extremely volatile and jeopardizing our long-term stable funding of key services like education and health care. Last year, the voters temporarily averted a fiscal disaster by passing Measures 66 and 67. And while I'm glad that we were able to find some revenues during a very difficult fiscal period and that they made our income tax structure marginally more progressive, the fact is, at the end of the day, they increased our reliance on the income tax, which puts us in even more jeopardy going forward. To give you some idea of the tremendous volatility of having a state revenue model based on income taxes, during the Great Recession, overall state revenues across the country dropped by about 6.2%. Corporate income tax revenues dropped by over 13%, and personal income taxes dropped by 10.6%. So the point is that income tax revenues dropped about twice as much as overall state revenues. And unlike other states, our revenue base is made up predominantly of income taxes, which puts us in great jeopardy. Reliance on the income tax is perhaps one of the most chronic and vexing problems in our state budget. The disruptions that it causes in the delivery of public services are severe and wasteful of public resources as these wild swings drain productivity from our delivery mechanisms for public services. And to make matters worse, we are hamstrung in our ability to deliver services like public education, which has led to a gradual erosion in personal income, which brings in less and less revenue for the state, which inhibits our ability to invest in education and workforce training to prepare our citizens for the workforce of the 21st century. The Oregon Business Council has called this cycle the cycle of scarcity. And I believe to break it, three things are required. First, we need to fundamentally redesign the way we provide significant public services, and there are two major reformation efforts before this legislative session directed at health care and at education. Secondly, we need to ensure that our public investments are productive, and third, we have got to transform the Oregon tax structure. These are tremendously large bites to chew, let alone to swallow, and I recognize that rationalizing our tax structure is going to be a long-term proposition. But there's one thing that we can do now that would make a huge difference in the near term and for which I have been fighting for a number of decades, and that is to revise the kicker law to give us the ability to create a robust savings account during good times to smooth over the wild fluctuations in state revenues during difficult fiscal circumstances. It is something that most responsible businesses and most responsible families seek to do, and there is no reason that the state should not do the same thing. And I believe that if we don't engage in this fundamental first step towards revenue reform in the state of Oregon, we will continue to bear a disproportionate share of the burden during fluctuations in both the national and global business cycle. Now, I do want to be clear that I don't support the state simply being allowed to build up a large surplus or allowing the emergency reserve fund to be used for every whim of the legislature. The account needs to be capitalized under very strict parameters, and the revenues should be used only when absolutely necessary to fund essential services like public education, the kinds of investments that will bear fruit for Oregon long into the future. I believe that Senate Joint Resolution 26 has the appropriate sideboards and represents part of an extremely promising effort to bring about the real and necessary reforms that Oregon desperately needs. My understanding of the bill is that 50% of the excess revenues derived from the personal income tax will go into the fund. The other 50% will be sent back to the taxpayers. 100% of the corporate kicker will go into the fund, but related legislation will steer that into a higher education fund to provide more stable funding for higher education, which is certainly one of the drivers of Oregon's economy. In addition, related legislation strikes a balance by mandating revenue savings by the legislature if our revenue forecasts meet or exceed expectations. So I want to thank Senator Burdick and Senator Morse and the other members of this committee for bringing a much-needed issue to the forefront. I think you've created a package that raises and addresses concerns on both sides of the aisle, and I commend you for your leadership in this area. I look forward to working with you and the entire legislature to make this proposal a reality. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor. We'll go to our treasurer, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Morse, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ted Wheeler, State Treasurer. It's no secret, having testified here before this committee in the past, that I'm no admirer of the state's current revenue structure. In fact, I would describe it from a financial perspective as being seriously dysfunctional. As the governor pointed out, we're too reliant on one source of revenues, the income tax. The structure creates high volatility. That makes it very hard for the state of Oregon and local communities to plan for the future of Oregon families. There are aspects of the structure that are not as conducive as possible to capital investment in early stage and small businesses, which most people acknowledge as being the backbone of our future economic activity and job growth in the state of Oregon. There are several ballot measures that, while meaning, have the impact of making it very difficult for local governments, particularly rural governments, to be able to provide the kind of services that our citizens want and expect government to provide. And worst of all, we're the only state in the country that has our kind of constitutionally mandated anti-savings mechanism built into our financial structure. Collectively, I believe these aspects of our revenue structure hold us back from funding the vital government services that people want, like public education, access to health care, basic needs, public safety. I also think they serve as an impediment to business development and job growth, which is something that's on everybody's minds now, but is always important to the future vitality of our state. What's more, the combination of a revenue structure that's volatile and doesn't have the kind of savings mechanism that the governor alluded to, it may be frustrating for citizens of this state, but it absolutely drives financial institutions, which sell our debt on the open market, ballistic. Every time we go before a rating agency and they judge the quality of our credit on the open market, they raise the question about the kicker, and they ask us what we are doing to reform that aspect of our revenue structure. So I want to tell you how much I appreciate your willingness to take this great first step in reforming some of the critical aspects of our revenue structure. I fully understand that you're not trying to address all of the aspects that I mentioned previously, but I think the legislation under consideration is a good, strong first step in addressing some of the more critical elements. This will help to reduce the volatility of the general fund. It'll lay a foundation for a framework for the smart and thoughtful investment of the so-called excess revenues. And finally, it gets at this aspect of the kicker that the independent rating agencies find so problematic, and which I agree are problematic to the revenue structure of the state of Oregon and our overall fiscal soundness. So I want to thank you very much for taking this issue up, and I'm pleased to be here with the governor and have this opportunity to support the good work that you're undertaking on behalf of the citizens of this state. Thank you very much for having me here today.
Thank you, and I would like to thank both of you publicly for your leadership on this. I know we've been talking about this for a long time. We know that we have really strong partners here, and showing up to testify is only the surface of it. I appreciate all the work that you've done and all the help you've provided. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Telford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Governor, I think the people of Oregon have realized the need for stability in their budgeting and their services. The volatility, I think, has become very well known now. But the people of Oregon have also said or I think believe, that the kicker, which they voted on, keeps the state from spending too much. They see it as a cap on spending. Could you explain to the voters, to me, how this is not going to be runaway spending, given the fact that we've got an acceptable amount of growth built into these bills, money going into the kicker to give stability to our budgeting process and our financing process. And at the end, if there's still money left, part of it going to, you know, non-recurring items, but there's still that little piece that's going to go back into the general fund that could be spent above and beyond what had been budgeted for. So could you explain and why this is not just totally taking away a cap on spending or controlled spending at the government level?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, if I might provide a little historical background, I actually was in this building when the kicker was created. It was following right before the collapse of the economy in 1981. We had a surplus. Measure 13 had just passed in California, and another one had been on the ballot in 78, and we were really afraid that that was going to happen up here, which eventually it did. So we created something called a 30% property tax relief program. We promised to pay 30% of everybody's property taxes regardless. We sent a big rebate check back to Oregonians. We put the kicker in the bill, and we asked them on the ballot, do they want to approve it? My belief is that nobody knew that there was a kicker clause in there. What they were voting on is a big rebate and having someone pay 30% of their property taxes. So I think it's no one really knew about the kicker until 1995 when this legislature changed it from a check-off on your deduction on your tax bill to a check you received just before Christmas. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of mythology around how we got there. Having said that, I think there's a legitimate concern about the state not building up a big surplus, and I do not support that. But as long as the state relies heavily, 90% on personal corporate income taxes, we will continue to have these wild fluctuations. And we all know that educating the workforce of the 21st century can't stop for 1 or 2 years because the bottom drops out of funding. You know, education is 50% of the general fund, and so it disproportionately gets hit whenever we have a downturn. So, you know, it has to be crafted tightly, and it has to be available only to prop up certain key budgets under certain circumstances. And, you know, I believe that you have appropriate provisions in here. You might want to, you know, look at them and tighten them up a little bit. I have no problem with that. But the idea is to simply say, you know, if indeed educating our kids and creating that workforce for a global economy is the most important thing we can do for our economy, then it can't be a sometimes proposition. And this gives us the ability to provide some degree of stability until the time when we can make more substantial changes in the structure of the Oregon revenue system.
Other questions from the committee? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Governor and Treasurer, for appearing today. A question, Treasurer, what fiscal impact or budget impact would there be if we, in fact, implemented these in the bond rating? Has your staff looked at that in terms of what impact the savings that would accrue to the state by virtue of having more integrity in our fiscal structure, revenue structure?
Madam Chair and Senator Morse, and I'll ask one of my staff members in the back of the room to throw a shoe at me if I misstate this fact, because I don't want to provide you with false information. But it is my understanding that for every level of credit rating increase, the state of Oregon saves $4 million per $100 million of debt issued. Feels okay. What I cannot predict with any accuracy is whether or not the credit rating agencies will actually improve our credit rating as a result of this. As you know, the state's credit rating was just improved to AA+ by Standard & Poor's. We were fortunate enough to be one of the only states that's having its credit rating actually improved this year by Standard & Poor's. The net result is the cost of infrastructure for schools, traded sector industries, research facilities, those costs to taxpayers now go down $4.5 million per $100 million of debt issued. So it's a good thing for us. It's not just the kicker on which they make their determination. They look at the state of the economy. They look at the legislature's fiscal discipline. They look at the governor's budget. They look at the operations of the Treasury and the funding of our pension plan. But this issue of the kicker is notably something that's raised time and time again. So from a financial perspective, I can tell you they don't care whether it's popular or unpopular. They are looking out for the interests of the people to whom they sell Oregon's bonds to. And what those individuals are saying is they need reliability in the revenue structure. They don't want to be concerned about the possibility that when times are tough in the state of Oregon, our revenues fluctuate to the point where our ability to service those bonds comes into question. That's how they make their decisions. Thank you for the question. Did I answer it, I hope?
Yes. Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And stay tuned.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. We have two of our colleagues here, Senator Bates and Senator Thompson.
President Thompson's not here?
No.
Yeah, I know.
We can get you a prescription, I think.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, I noticed that, as my good colleague here has mentioned, the cameras are gone now, so we can tell the truth. I will leave if you'd like.
Sure. Please.
I'm going to take a little different approach to talking about these bills.
The first truth you have to tell is your name.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
Take a little different approach to talking about this than you might expect, and I will get to the bill in a moment. For the record, I'm Alan Bates, District 3, Southern Oregon. And first thing I want to do is thank you for putting together a very difficult and very compact, I won't say simple, set of bills and a referral to people that to me makes absolute sense. That's very elegantly done, and I know there's another piece that's not on these pieces of paper before us, capital gains issues. I know you're going to have a part of this discussion, and I appreciate that. The bills, as you already know, are a referral to people for changing how we handle the kicker in the state. I'm not going to go into the details of that, followed by a mandatory savings plan and establishing for the corporate kicker, at least, as you all know, a stability fund for that group also. What I want to share with you is that I think these bills and the referral require a couple things that sometimes we're a little short of in this state, and it'll take a great effort to get them across. It's going to require, I believe, first off, some trust. Trust amongst ourselves that the handshake we have on these bills as well as capital gains is one we can count on, both in our own chamber and the chamber across the aisle. The other issue is a trust of the people of the state of Oregon that we're going to do what we said we're going to do with these bills and stick to it. I spent about a half an hour this morning on the hotline to Southern Oregon. The major discussion was after our budget was this. We probably spent 20 minutes going over these issues, talking both the business community, the education community, some human resources people about what it would mean to have a stable revenue source for this state, that we'd no longer be on the terrible roller coaster we've been on for the last 10 years that I've been here, and actually could set budgets for the future, not just for a biennium, but have some idea what the future would mean, stable funding that would not be going up and down and putting us in positions where we make horrible cuts through the budget sessions, meeting over and over again. When I first came to this building, we had a discussion about having a special session. I was told by the Senate at that time, I was serving the House, that we don't believe in special sessions. We never have them in the state because we don't need them. That changed a bit and within a year of that time, and I've now been through more than I can count as we come back in, slash and cut budgets, trying to figure out how to make things work. borrowing $500 million for operations against the Tobacco Trust Fund will be paid off next year. All the manipulations we go through to make a budget work, when in fact what we need is a revenue source that we can count on, that we can budget against, and that makes sense. So I appreciate what you brought forward here. I know you know these bills better than I can ever speak to. I am learning about more and more of the details in them as we go along. But I want to tell you that I agree wholeheartedly in what you're trying to do here. The basis of this is important that we get it done. I know there's going to be some changes in 968 and 754 before we see them as a final product, but I look forward to having opportunity and look forward to seeing them, having the opportunity to vote for them on the floor. And I'll stop there and take any questions you might want to ask, as long as we don't go into deep detail, especially at 968, Senator Burdick.
Yes, we're familiar with that issue. Thank you. Senator Bates, do you need to leave right away, or should we take Senator Thompson?
This takes precedent over, from my point of view, anything I'm doing in Ways and Means right now. If we don't get these issues resolved, then my life in Ways and Means continues to be a small portion of the seventh level of hell for me. Thank you.
Very well put. Then we'll take Senator Thompson and then open it up to questions for both of you.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. Chuck Thompson, District 26 from Hood River, here to just kind of bring a little local story to this, to what we're talking about today, and a little history from Hood River County. I've been a commissioner there 16 years, and probably 10 years before that time, five people sat at the board and made a decision similar to what we're going to make here in this body. We cut a certain amount of timber in Hood River County out of our 30,000 acres every year. And depending on the price, we'd make $600 million 1 year and $200 million another year. Our county general fund would fluctuate every year depending on the price of timber. The folks on the commission decided we're going to make a stabilization account similar to this. Most of the stuff is very complicated in here, but it works very simply. And I see this working as simple as that once we get it started. But so we would put $4 million in our general fund every year. If we made six, we put it in a savings account. So if we only made three 1 year, we'd subsidize it. And it's 25 years since the inception of that, and that stability fund is what got Hood River County through this recessionary time. So this is a great bill. It's great fiscal policy, and I know, looking ahead 25 years from now, that we'll be able to, the people in the state of Oregon will look back and say this was a great decision. This will get us through the next recessionary time, and I'm very proud to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you both for coming. We're all getting very busy, and you've got some of us are more busy than others, so especially our Ways and Means colleagues. So are there questions from the committee? Thank you. Thank you again.
Thanks again for doing a great job on this. We really do appreciate it. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. Adios. Okay, our next witness will be Dave Yaden.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is David Yaden. I'm a member of the State Board of Higher Education. I also did chair Governor Kulongoski's Reset Committee for Education Beyond High School. The state board has not had a chance to sit down and review the legislation, so I cannot be here on behalf of the full board, but I am fully confident that I express the gratitude of the entire higher education community in Oregon for this very important work you've undertaken, and express our support for the higher education funding proposal in Senate Bill 754. It is truly significant, and I want to underscore that. I think everybody on this committee certainly understands the story of Oregon higher education over the last 20 years as a result of sort of ballot box budgeting and bouts of economic pneumonia. As a result, it's been down for higher ed more than almost any other function in the state budget, down to the point that we're about 45th in the nation right now in terms of the funding per student that we provide. This has fallen most heavily, or the burden has fallen most heavily upon students. We take as our most core values in higher education here in Oregon, access and affordability. 20 years ago, the state provided two-thirds of the cost of an education, students one-third. That's now reversed. We are close to the point of pricing many ordinary Oregonians out of their economic and social futures. We are in danger of depriving employers of the talent they need for jobs and for the flow of innovation they need to keep businesses thriving. So this is a fundamentally important economic development opportunity for the state. Again, we think it's that significant. We are so appreciative of how far you've gone. I would like to put it in a slightly broader perspective, if I might. I just came back from the annual meeting of the trustees of America's colleges and universities, both public and private. One of our speakers was James Fallows, who is probably our best observer and reporter on what's going on in China and Asia and America's relationship to them. Very thoughtful guy. His message was pretty simple. Other countries are expanding their educational reach, their technical training capacities at rates which we do not fathom. America's future will be ever more reliant, in his view, upon the one great asset and advantage we have, and that is the sheer capacity for innovation and creative energy that this country holds, that other countries so far have not been able to replicate. And his message was very simple. The font, the source of that creative energy is in the higher education system. So what you're doing is necessary for Oregon, but is also part of a much larger story for America, and therefore we are truly grateful for what you're doing. Thank you. Be happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, and thank you for coming today. Questions from the panel? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Okay, our next panel will be Jeremy Rogers and John Mullen.
Thank you. My name is Jeremy Rogers with the Oregon Business Council. Thanks for the opportunity, Senator Burdick and members of the committee, to testify before you today. We at the Oregon Business Council sincerely appreciate your leadership on this issue and know that it's one that members of this committee have been working on for years. And I think the state and business community owes you a lot of gratitude for continuing to push hard on this issue and to try to work across party lines and creatively among interest groups this session to try to get a meaningful stability fund for the state of Oregon. There's many problems with the state's tax system, and I think that the governor and treasurer spoke to those earlier. But perhaps the most disturbing one is the instability of the revenue system. We have the most or one of the most volatile revenue systems, and we save little compared to other states. It's a toxic combination. It severely cripples the ability of our state to make progress in terms of education outcomes, to protect our most vulnerable citizens, to protect the citizens' public safety. And it particularly a problem for Oregon because of the volatility. In fact, the tax system is so volatile, you know, we've been dubbed by the Pew Center for the States as, one of, the five states most likely to be in a position like California at some point, because we seem to not be able to get a grip on that problem. So thank you very much for continuing to push. We really like the direction that you're going with the proposals that are before the committee today. Some portion of the kicker revenues, mandatory savings, an increased cap on the size of the stability fund, and putting the savings provisions in the Constitution. I think those are all really key components to the bill that we support. I'd like to mention that the mandatory savings piece, it's been dubbed by some as a spending cap, and I don't think that's really appropriate. It's mandatory savings, which means that overall the same amount of money is going to be spent over the long run. The question is, when is it spent? And how much do you spend during good times versus bad times? And so I think that it's a key portion of the bill to have mandatory savings. And I think that, just for the record, I've been hearing people call this a spending cap, and I don't think that's what it is. So I wanted to mention that. I think that the committee and the legislature this year, in addition to moving these bills forward, has the opportunity to do some additional things that will dramatically improve the state's fiscal position. There's discussion of capital gains reform. As the treasurer mentioned, there's the elements of our tax system that severely hurt the investment climate in the state, and capital gains is a big part of that. And we appreciate the focus that the legislature is putting on that issue, and a lot of good ideas being put out and a lot of discussion taking place to try to come up with a bipartisan agreement both on revenue stability and on capital gains. And the other piece, which I think ties into this and makes the revenue stability measures more meaningful, is the effort to kind of change the way the state budgets for and delivers services. I know Senator Morse has bills relating to a more long-term, rational, performance-based budgeting process. The governor has a working group on that topic, and the governor and various committees of the legislature have been advancing reforms to ensure the sustainability of delivering education services and healthcare services, recognizing that we need to really think hard about how to get the outcomes that we need for the dollars that we have and continuously improve the way we're delivering those services so that we can provide adequate and quality services, we can save enough money to do that, and we can make some tweaks to the system that improve the business and investment climate. Frankly, Oregon Business Council has supported broad tax reform for years, and we continue to do so, but I think the direction you're heading this session with the targeted approaches in this bill and some of the other things I mentioned is a tremendous opportunity for the state, and we encourage you to keep working hard and to let us know what we can do to help you succeed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen here as the co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon Tax and Revenue Committee. In many ways, HISCO, as we're known, we grew up with this discussion. We were formed in the mid-1980s, and one of our very earliest discussions was about the kicker. We held a press conference at one point in time to compare what you could buy, small appliances, a coffee grinder, a cassette recorder. This was the mid-80s, in comparison to what was needed as far as funding of services. Later on, in close to 1990, we developed our tax and revenue principles of fairness, adequacy, and stability. And we believe that if this reform is done right, we have the opportunities for both adequacy and stability. And we are very much encouraged that this discussion is going on. As
the committee is well aware, the issues in human services are countercyclical to the economy. For those people who have spent time down in Ways and Means this session, it's never been more apparent about the hurt that is here in the state of Oregon. So to have something that we can rely on in the future for downturns and having the dollars available when people are really hurting the worst, this would be very much appreciated. And while HISCO hasn't taken a position on these bills, we are very much interested in studying and learning more about them. And in fact, I would just conclude by thanking you, Madam Chair, and Senator Morris for your involvement of stakeholders in discussion about these issues. We very much appreciate it and look forward to further discussion and hope to be coming forward with a specific recommendation on this in the future.
Thank you very much. Questions? Senator Telford.
I'm not sure I have a question as much as a comment from Oregon Business Council's testimony. I think we need, as we move forward on these bills, we need to be very clear in how we talk about spending cap. My understanding is that in this kicker reform, we have, you know, a certain amount that is allowed to be retained in the general fund at the end of a biennium, if there's excess money, which we hope we get there someday again, for a growth index, you know, a certain amount to allow a reasonable amount of growth in state. Then the next level is mandatory savings for stability. We're not capping stability. I'm not talking about that. Any monies after that, though, 50% basically would go to some non-recurring expenditures such as debt services, which are currently being done out of the general fund. But then the other piece, that other 50%, is where the spending cap goes away because it goes back into the general fund. And I think that's where Oregonians need to understand, and better explanation, I think, obviously, that's the spending cap we're referring to, that if you return all the excess above revenue forecasts to the taxpayers in the form of a kicker, in essence, you've just limited the amount of growth of the government. I think Oregonians are feeling that because there's still money that's allowed back into the general fund is additional spending. So we're not talking about money in the stability fund going back into the general fund. Money in the stability fund doesn't go into operations. So that's not where the spending cap argument is. So I think as we move forward with this, we need to be very clear as to what we're talking about, capping and spending caps and things like that, because I think that's where the confusion and the concern is going to really just come down. I think it's going to come down to that.
Yeah, and your comments are really applying to Senate Bill 968, which is the mandatory savings. Of course, under current law, all of the money that comes in, whether it's 10% above the previous year or 40% above the previous year, all of it is spent, and this would have a limitation on how much of that can be spent and how much would have to be saved. Of this package, Senate Bill 968 is definitely the most complex, and it's very important to understand it. So I'm glad you raised that, Senator Telfer. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Okay, our next panel will be Angie Dilks and Art Towers.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Arthur Towers, Political Director for Service Employees Union Local 503. I came several weeks ago to testify before your committee on similar matters, and so I'll make my remarks today as brief as I possibly can. First of all, we really appreciate the time and effort the committee's put in, and you, Chair Burdick, and Vice Chair Morris have put in to figuring out a strong way to move forward on this issue. Revenue stability is really important for quality services. That's something that we're all fighting for, and you're definitely on the right track, in my opinion. We do want to recognize that in order to pass the joint resolution that indeed it needs to pass muster with the legislators and with the voters. We're concerned that we're not quite there yet in terms of having a vehicle that can meet both needs. But again, we're all looking forward to working with you to craft something that is good public policy that can move forward and gain final passage. We also applaud the progress that's been made on the spending limitation legislation, Senate Bill 968. We feel that it's an improvement over the previous version. Still looking forward to working with you to figure out more of the nuances, more of the details, more of the consequences of that approach. So, again, you know, we're very much in favor of kicker reform. We're very much in favor of promoting stability. And, again, I'll just leave it right there. Thank you very much. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. And thank you for your help as a member of the stakeholder group that's been meeting regularly on this. Welcome, Angie.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. Excuse me, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Angie Dilks, and I'm with the Oregon Business Association. As our organization, though a different person, also testified a couple of weeks ago about, we support the creation of a robust rainy day fund as part of the reforms necessary to better align the state services and resources and to provide the stability necessary to efficiently deliver outcomes-based public services. We believe the reform effort should begin with the adoption of meaningful budget reforms that reduce the cost of public services, such as reflected in Governor Kitzhaber's budget and embraced in the Oregon Business Plan. On that note, we're also encouraged by the legislature's progress on some of those issues, as indicated in the co-chair's budget released, was it just last week? Feels like longer ago than that. Following the reset of the state's cost structure, we support the adoption of policies to stabilize Oregon's revenue system to ensure the protection of essential state services. And without an opportunity to review in detail with our folks the three bills up for discussion today, I can just say generally we're encouraged by the work being done. We continue to support the enhancement of an emergency emergency reserve fund through the diversion of the corporate kicker into the fund, perhaps dedication of a portion of the personal kicker and a mandatory general fund savings component in good times to build a fund large enough to protect Oregon during economic downturns. After budget reforms and stabilization have been achieved, OBA supports investing in Oregon's economic recovery and long-term economic health through key investments that promote job creation and retention. We applaud Senator Burdick, Senator Morse for their long-term commitment to this effort, very hard work to continue to move this process forward, and look forward to working together to try to hopefully make this the session that we can get this done. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
And thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Okay, Dana Hepper and J.L. Wilson.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Dana Hepper. I'm the Advocacy Director for Stand for Children. Stand for Children has over 2,000 members in Oregon, but a handful of them are here today to demonstrate their support for your efforts. So thanks so much to them for being here. And thank you to the members of this committee, and especially Senator Burdick and Senator Morse, for doing the most significant and serious work I've seen done on this issue in my time here lobbying this legislature. Stable funding for schools and other critical services is a critical piece of getting children the education that they deserve and helping them be successful in life. Right now, across the state, school districts are choosing between laying off their teachers or cutting their teachers' pay, either by freezing their COLAs and their step increases or by cutting school days and sending kids home earlier and earlier in the summer. And we know that if we'd saved better during the good times, if we'd set aside some of that $1.1 billion kicker into a rainy day fund and potentially even more of the dollars of the general fund budget that we did spend into a rainy day fund, we'd still be making some cuts, but those cuts would be significantly less. And that would provide our kids with a more stable and effective school system. And we know that's what we're here to talk about today, and we just want to applaud you, and we want to say the time is now. We can't wait any longer. Let's use this opportunity where we see the impact of our lack of a robust rainy day fund. Let's use that opportunity right now to say never again. Let's set aside money so that the next time we have a downturn like this, we aren't facing these same kind of cuts. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Welcome, Jail.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members. For the record, J.L. Wilson representing Associated Oregon Industries. I was excited to come and tell you that last week AOI Board of Directors approved SJR 26, and then it all changed. But
it's all there, just in pieces.
That's right. The concepts as we understand them in these three bills, we still support. Our policy positions that we've adopted include a support of the legislature making regular deposits into a rainy day fund. We've historically supported the 2% kicker, but we also believe that the 2% kicker is an appropriate place to go to provide funding for the reserve fund contingent on general fund deposits into that fund. We support that balanced approach. It appears to be intact in this measure. And of course, we do support full return of kicker monies based on a fully reserved fund, which this appears to do as well. Capital gains is also of interest to us. AOI has probably supported a reduction since inception, and higher ed stability is obviously a going concern for us. So all the elements of the package appear to be there, and we support this process going forward.
Thank you so much. Questions from the panel? Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Jody Weiser and Ralph Groner. Ralph, we just called your name. I don't know if you heard.
Did you call me?
Oops, just called you. Just walked in the door at just the right time.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ralph Groner, representing ASME. I'm here today to support all three of the measures, particularly the referral to the voters and the kicker measure, as well as higher ed contribution from corporate kicker. Primarily, I think, one that's economic sense for all of us in unions who expect income tax to flow our way to support some way of helping create jobs. And that's been my major priority for about 20-some years in this building. I just want to make a comment why I support the kicker. It's analogous to the other night I was at an urban renewal hearing. A lot of angry people in Oregon City, about 500 of them. So I've been supporting the Rivers, which is 2,500 employees. I wish the state would get behind it. It's second to Intel in size. And I went, and they asked me why I opposed a vote, and this is analogous, a vote on every urban renewal issue. And I said, well, kind of reminds me, if you think the voters always have a handle on these issues, why did they support 5 and then later measure 50. I understand we were the highest property tax state. However, I'm not sure voters connect the dots always, because when I went into Paul's office, I found out this last session with our $14.4 billion when we started budget, that $4 billion of that budget was an 18% increase in K-12 from two ballot measures not created by the Oregon legislature, but unbeknownst to the public. And I really am not here to talk about fixing property taxes, please. The fact is that that cost shocked me. That was $4 billion. Just for the 40% increase from going to 30% funding when I was sitting there to 70, it's a little below because you've been down on everyone, but to 70. So all we asked was, what's the 40% increase? And it was the same size as the deficit we face. So I came to probably a naive conclusion, because I cover Ways and Means about 23 budgets, and I said, why is it when the halcyon days, was that a good word for a labor guy, halcyon days in front of Ways and Means, why is it when jobs were just booming? Why was higher ed, why were the community colleges, why were my budgets remaining basically constant? And in terms of general fund, not the whole budget, the total budget, because when we talk increases, the public may not understand there are three budgets. And the fact that Obama gave us $1 billion federal dollars, I didn't really have a lot of say about that. That was a federal budget, which we used over here. But that's always the case. We have federal dollars. The fact that we have road increase, because this legislature, in my opinion, stimulated the economy, at least I hope, fixing roads and bridges, that's the other fund's budget. But the general fund's the one we talk about, and that's hard for the public to get a handle on, similar to urban renewal. So my only comment is those budgets were being held constant because the cost of the ballot measures, two of them, passed by the public, were costing an inordinate increase every biennium, and I've now come to a probably an unpopular, but that's my style, position. I'm not sure the economy can catch up with the percentage growth that those two ballot measures, 5 and 50, are costing us. Paul will say, as long as those jobs are, I hate the word family wage, so let me say Intel-type jobs, or construction jobs paying good money, we might have a shot, the economist is here. My contention is that cost is going up every biennium, and the fact is we absolutely need the kicker, and in no way will that solve Oregon's problem. It'll only diminish, diminutively, the problem we face, primarily because we've had problems where we overtaxed on property. We were number one. We solved it by passing two measures, which robbed Peter the income tax of the general fund to pay Paul the local property tax for K-12. Now we're in trouble at higher ed, human services, and every other program. Folks, my position is, yes, you need the kicker. Thank you for helping higher ed. That creates jobs. Thank you for having the courage. And by the way, you, Senator Morse, even paid for, I cannot believe it, but for our questionnaire of the public when we were on the Governor's Commission on this issue, and thank you, Jenny, for the hard work you put in on those 2 years on the issue. And I feel honored that I got to serve with people who did that work. So my question, comment, and maybe I hope I'm wrong, I'll be retiring in about 2.5 years. My philosophy is, until we understand as Oregonians that the ballot measures we've passed ourselves have far exceeded the capability of Oregon's income tax to cover the cost of higher ed, human services, K-12, we are going to have to start the discussion of finding some other source of revenue above and beyond, not this session, I know that, above and beyond the kicker. Thank you.
A little beyond the scope of these, but thank you for your comment. Jody.
Good afternoon. Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness Oregon. So clearly everybody in this room seems to agree that we need to have savings and we need to have kicker reform because it's not good policy, and we've been working with you since May to try to move this forward. The statutory changes in the dash, I don't have these numbers memorized yet, SB 968 and SB 754 are complex, and they're still to be fully understood. But SRJ 26-1 is simple, and it's the kind of thing that I think the voters will understand, and it sounds like it's the best we're going to get with adequacy, and it's time to move that forward. It's a piece by itself that needs to be done, whether we do anything else or not. Senator Telfer, you talked about being careful about using words like spending limits and spending caps, and I think we agree on this. We're not capping anything. We're spreading it out so it's more smoothly available to us. We're not saying we can't spend money. We're saying we'll spend it the next time we're in a hole like we're in now, instead of spending it when it happens to walk in the door. But since the beginning of our discussions in May, there's been talk of an undescribed capital gains tax cut that might be coupled with passage of a kicker and savings reform. And we'll be watching carefully to see how this bubbles out in the next days. We've not long known that in 9 months, on January 1st, 2012, there will be a significant capital gains tax cut when the income tax rate for those families with income above $250,000 drops to 9.9%. The prediction is that this will save those families $134 million in the next biennium and $250 million in the biennium after that. But things have evolved since both this bill and elsewhere. The landscape has changed, and now we see this. With the particular plan that we've come up with, instead of means testing, doing a 50-50 split, every time there's a kicker, those same families will again get a capital gains tax reduction because they'll get significantly sized kicker checks. And in addition to that, already this legislature, the same families have gotten a $93 million tax break with bonus depreciation and 179 expensing. That bonus depreciation issue seems to have been the break that was most wanted this session by the business community. We don't think there's much room for much more to give to these advantaged parts of our community. Public sentiment understands means testing, and they understand that a capital gains tax cut flies in the face of what they want when they say they want means testing changes. They're unlikely to buy increased cuts in services or more lost jobs in our community schools in support of anything but a very, very finely targeted capital gains change that is assured to bring jobs to Oregon now, not something that just helps the general investor and changes the perception of Oregon, but something that really is targeted to job-creating businesses in this state. That's the kind of thing that I think they will find palpable, and anything else really runs in the face of public sentiment and would be hard for us to pass as a issue when we get to before the voters. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
I do have one question, if I may. Jody, why do you suppose that Oregon lags so badly in venture capital formation?
Well, you know, actually, our venture capital has gone way up since we increased our tax rates. The venture capital community, it has gotten more money in the last 18 months or so than it got in months and months and months before that. And our tax rate's up. So I don't, there isn't a relationship. When I do venture capital investing, I don't ask what the tax rate's going to be. I ask, is this a good idea? Do I think this business will make money? And if I think the business will make money, that's what matters. Am I going to get a 2% or a 20% or a 200% return on my investment? The taxes are not the issue. It's not the issue we should be addressing, and I don't think it is. I think that much of the capital, of the venture capital money that has come into our state has come from California. They have the same kind of income tax system that we do for wealthy people. And what are they, like 0.1% lower than our highest tax rate right now, so it's not significant. And you get taxed, if we're talking about money coming into the state, you get taxed where you live. So if I invest in something in a no-income tax state, and it does well, that business really profits, I'm still going to pay Oregon capital gains tax on my gains. It doesn't, or if I invest in a California or a Boston, it doesn't matter where the investment is. If it works, like I hope it'll work, I will pay Oregon capital gains tax on it. And those investments won't do anything for jobs in Oregon. It's only when I put money in Oregon jobs that it's going to do something for the tax system. And I think the other thing is, frankly, if you look at our neighboring states, they have far higher percentages of wealthy people because of the particular businesses that they have had that has generated that kind of wealth. And so they have more venture capital available because there's more people with extra money, and there's a more robust venture capital community. I mean, really, the whole idea of little venture capital groups getting together and bringing people in and passing money out, that's pretty new in Oregon compared to other parts of the country, and it's starting. But I really don't think, Senator Morris, that When we make investment decisions, they're based on the tax structure.
There are other people that feel otherwise, so we'll respectfully disagree.
They either feel otherwise or they think it's a good arguing point.
Yeah. Well, to be continued later, that doesn't really pertain to these bills. So any other questions? Thank you, Jody. Anybody else who wanted to speak on these measures today? Okay. Oh, you want to speak, Cappy? Come on up. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cappy Eaton. I'm the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. For some time now, the League has, for a very long time, we've been very supportive of the states providing programs and services that protect the basic services and enhance the quality of life for its citizens. However, this ability obviously has been deteriorating in the last two decades, and this is the result both of economic downturns, but also mandated uses of the general fund revenues, which have been adequately discussed by the previous speakers with regard to initiative and those kinds of things. We have also a long time looked at the need for revising the kicker and for providing the reserves. Again, you've heard lots of testimony in favor of that. We believe that the kicker law, as it is in the Constitution, it has to, we believe that the Constitution needs to be revised to put in the rainy day fund and the funding for the rainy day fund. We believe that given the lack of reliable funding for public higher education in Oregon, the establishment of the University Stability Fund is very important. We encourage an open and thoughtful discussion of the bills before this committee today. We realize the discussion has been going on for some time, and we appreciate the efforts that you've put into, particularly Senator Morris and Senator Burdick, over the last several years in bringing forward these issues to change the way in which we use the kicker, how it's used, and the necessity for building up our reserve funds. We look forward to supporting the final proposal that will meet the revenue needs of the reserves and use the surplus personal and corporate income tax revenues to provide adequacy and stability. And thank you for this opportunity to comment.
And thank you for coming. Are there questions? Thank you very much. Is there anybody else who wanted to testify on this? Okay. Well, this continues to be a work in progress. You've not heard the last of this. But for now, we will close the public hearing on these three measures. And if there's no other business before the committee, we're not going to meet on Friday, correct?
Friday morning.
On Friday morning, we have a tax expenditure committee meeting on which we all serve, and Friday afternoon's meeting will not be held.
But we're redistricting in the morning, so I won't be here on Friday morning.
Okay.
We'll be in Portland Friday morning. We're going to be somewhere up there.
Okay.
Four times.
So we are adjourned. We are adjourned.